Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glaspiego. We're joined by longtime former NBA player Nate Robinson. Nate, how's everything going today?
Man, everything's good, man. The sun is shining in Seattle, so that's always a good thing.
Nice. So Nate was made available to us by the American Flag Football League. They're going to be broadcasting games on NFL Network between June 29th and July 19th. I've written before. I think it's going to be some fun. I'm looking forward to it. Nate, how did you get set up with this league?
Oh, man, one of my friends, Romel Witherspoon, and my little brother, Anthony Stewart, they kind of, you know, gave me the idea about, you know, doing something fun like this. And, the FFL reached out to me and they was like, man, we wanted you to play. They wanted me to play last year, but I was overseas in Venezuela, so I couldn't make it over because I was in the championship over there. So I told them, I was like, if I'm not overseas playing next year, I'll play. And then what they was trying to do, they were trying to see if I could put a basketball team, get a couple basketball buddies to come and play. And I got Carlos Boozer and Matt Barnes on my team, you know, to go out, and I got some size, some big tight end receiver type guys that can, you know, play the game and just, you know, catch and get us some points. So, you know, hopefully that works out. And, I'm excited, man. This is an opportunity to showcase, you know, my football skills that I had, you know, growing up as a kid. Definitely a platform to showcase my talents to NFL scouts that are going to be watching the game, potentially, hopefully. And, you know, just to show them that, you know, I can compete at a high level at the age that I'm at. And if I would have been, you know, if I would have picked football, that I could have been one of the best defensive backs to ever to play the game.
I'm curious, how long of an NFL career do you think that you could have had if when you were in college at Washington, you had ultimately decided to pursue football full time as opposed to pursuing basketball full time?
I think if I would have done that and picked football over basketball, I think I would have had a pretty long career. I probably would have been still playing right now just because I know my competitive nature and spirit. I probably would have transitioned to playing free safety more so. And I believe in myself and my talent that, you know, that God gave me, and my work ethic is crazy. So I know I would have been in great shape. I would just have to work on my speed and strength, and I think that would probably be the hardest part is working on strength and speed. Everything else comes naturally.
I wanted to switch gears and talk about your basketball career. You started off with the Knicks and kind of really, to no fault of your own, a really tumultuous era for the team. It's that last kind of disastrous Larry Brown season, 2 years with Isaiah Thomas where – there was a lot of things going on off the court with him. And then you also played for Mike D'Antoni. I'm curious, D'Antoni didn't really succeed with the Knicks or with the Lakers, but now he's having this renaissance with the Rockets. Could you have seen that coming, how well that he's doing in Houston?
Yeah, I don't think we had the right personnel for his style of play. I think that's what the big thing was. I believe if we would have had the time to, you know, play our young guys, you know, just build our team instead of trying to get a LeBron James or a big name in New York, because that's what New York wants. They want the big name, the guy to come in and try to win as many games. But I think we had a solid young team that if we would have stuck with our team, which is it was me, Channing Frye, David Lee, Wilson Chandler, Ronaldo Bachman, Marty Collins, Danilo Gallinari, we had a Chris Duhon, we had a solid little squad. If we would have kept that squad together for like at least 2 more years, I think that we would have been a playoff team. And our style of play was, you know, we could score the ball. We just have to figure out how to play defense and mesh well with each other. But it's great to see, you know, coach's success now for the Houston Rockets, man, because they have the personnel. Everybody can score. Everybody can want to play one-on-one. Everybody can create their own shot and create for others. So it just makes it that much sweeter knowing that their offense is their best defense.
And you got traded from the Knicks to the Celtics. I'm curious. The Knicks were not a winning organization when you're there, but it's New York, it's Madison Square Garden, it's the Mecca, it's your first team in the league. You're going from there to a title contender right away. Are you happy when you get the phone call that you're switching teams, or are you disappointed because you feel like you have unfinished business?
Well, I definitely have unfinished business, but I know the NBA is a business alone. So for me, I was just, you know, I just wanted to go somewhere where somebody wanted me and they wanted to let me be myself and play the game that I, you know, that I love. And the Celtics gave me an opportunity to come play. I didn't play that much because, you know, Rondo was on the team. Who else was on that? Rondo, so many greats, KG. Ray Allen. So they already had their formula and what they wanted to do. I was just coming in to give Rondo a breather every little now and again. And it was fun, man. I had a great experience playing, you know, for the Celtics because we got all the way to the championship, even though we didn't win. But I got an opportunity to showcase my talent, knowing I can play in the playoffs. You know, when it's time to shine, that they would say the best superstars are made in the playoffs. So it was fun, man. I had a great run in for the Celtics. Then the next year they traded me with Kendrick Perkins to the Thunder, and then after the Thunder I went to Golden State, and then Golden State to Chicago, and then Chicago to Denver.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask about that NBA Finals. So it's a team, as you said, it had a core of Garnett, Pierce, Allen, Rondo. They won the NBA title 2 years back. You leave Boston up 3-2, then you get blown out in game 6, 89-67. You lose a close one, 83-79 in game 7. You just got into the team, but it's game 7 of the NBA Finals. How long does losing the championship stick with you emotionally?
It hurt a lot knowing that, you know, the confetti and all the hard work of the season, it just, you know, we just came up short. But it was a great experience for me, man. I got a chance to be in the finals. I didn't play that much. I probably played like 4 seconds. But, you know, me and Big Baby helped him win the game. What was that, game 6? I think it was. We helped him win game 6 and forced a game 7 in L.A.
I think it was game and, 5 you know, that you won. You guys lost.
Game 5. Yeah, for game 5. We forced, you know, we had a great game 5. We lost game 6 and we had to go back to for game 7. And, you know, Doc didn't give us the opportunity to showcase our talents in the finals. And it sucked, but at the same time, I understand, you know, he wanted to give. You know, his starters, the opportunity, you know, to carry us home. So I can't be too mad. I just think, you know, I thank Doc for the opportunity to play at a high level and, you know, on one of the best historical teams ever.
So it's been less than a decade since that series, but it's a whole nother era of basketball now. Because in that finals, the only, like, a team only got to 100 points twice. No one scored over 103 points in a game. The Celtics scored less than 70 points in game 6. In game 7, neither team got to 85. It's impossible to imagine a series like that today. Like, obviously, though, teams like the Warriors and the Rockets with their ball movement and their three-point shooting, they've reinvigorated the game from an offensive perspective. I'm curious, as you look at it now that you're a member of the media a little bit, from a basketball mechanics perspective, how do we get from there to where we are today in under a decade?
I would say evolution, time. You know, the players are working on their game even more now than back in the day. That's what it is. You know, players are they're developing faster, you know, and at a massive rate. So you got to kind of you got to kind of, you know, keep up. You got to adapt. And, you know, guys are, you know, saying scoring 40s is, like, easy now. It's, like, it's a thing to do. You know, more scoring is in the NBA than ever before, ever recorded. The point is because the guys are shooting the ball extremely well. Not just one guy on the team. It's multiple guys now. Not just guards. It's big men. You got DeMarcus Cousins shooting threes, Anthony Davis. You know, everybody stepping out and knocking down the three ball. So everybody just adding something new to something new to their game, and it's fun to watch.
And like you mentioned earlier, you spent a year on the Warriors. It was the year before they started to really get good. But Steph Curry, Klay Thompson were on the team. There was like a little bit of a mismatch where Curry and Monte Ellis, they didn't really gel together on the floor at the same time. The Warriors definitely made the right decision in retrospect, sticking with Curry over Ellis. I'm curious, do you think that the Warriors would have had the same last 3 or 4 years that they had if they hadn't moved on from Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr? Or do you think that they needed to get rid of Jackson in order to make that leap?
Well, I think everything happened for a reason. I wouldn't necessarily say you had to get rid of Coach Mark Jackson was a great guy, great coach. But, you know, change is always good. And then you got to, you know, the formula and the ingredients that they use on that team, it works. They got the great personnel. Everybody plays the right way. And I mean, they've been the hardest team to beat. They've been to the finals the last, what, three, four years. So they've been doing something right. Whatever they're doing it right.
I think that your best season, or at least your best season of late, was in 2012, 2013 with the Bulls, where you started a quarter of the games, and the games you didn't start, you were a big spark plug off the bench. What do you think gelled that year for you?
I just got an opportunity to play, finally. Like, guys were hurt. Kids had to play me, and even though he probably didn't want to, he had to. And I just wanted to showcase, like, this is my opportunity to show that I'm just not a dunker, three-time slam dunk champion, that I really can play the game of basketball, man. I got lots in my game. I play hard. I bring the fire every night. I may not play the way coaches may like, but, you know, I play the way I think the game is supposed to be played, high energy, you know, having fun. So it's been fun, you know, getting that opportunity to play for Chicago, playing for, you know, Michael Jordan's, you know, where he started his legacy. It was just awesome to play in Chicago at that time.
What teammates from your decade or so in the league do you still keep in touch with, that you're still close with?
Carlos Boozer. Me and Carlos Boozer have a podcast called Hold That Podcast. We talk almost every day. Darrell Arthur, Darrell Wright, Wilson Chandler, Matt Barnes. I mean, there's a lot of guys I'm cool with that, you know, keep up.
What was your favorite city to live in as an NBA player? Like, obviously, you're in Seattle now, so I think that's where you want to be. But of the places you played, what was your favorite place to live?
I love New York, of course. I love Chicago. It was fun. Playing for the Warriors was awesome because my family's from Oakland. I got a lot of family from Oakland, California. So it was cool to be able to play in front of my grandmother and my dad. And all my family that didn't get an opportunity to watch me play live, they got to watch me during the lockout year. And, you know, was in California, that was fun. It's been a great run, man. Playing everywhere. That's the beauty of getting traded so much. You get opportunity to make fans everywhere.
Is there anything that we didn't talk about either with the American Flag Football League or your NBA career or anything else that you want to discuss right now?
I'll be playing in the Big Three this year. I'm playing on Jermaine O'Neal's team. I'm excited about that. So hopefully that can trigger something. Don't need any other coaches and GMs and scouts or whatever that I can still play the game at a high level. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, that's about it. I got some socks coming out. I hold that sock line by dry line socks. You know, they're probably pretty much the most comfortable socks in the world. So you can be looking out for that. Me and Carlos Boozer starting our own Hold That merchandise, t-shirts, clothing line, you could say. That's about it. Nothing too much, man. For my fans, man, I just want to say thank you to all my fans that always believed in me. And I want to say thank you to all the people that doubted me and that didn't like my game. You guys motivated me to be the player that I am today and the person. So I just thank everybody.
Thank you, Nate. We appreciate your time on the podcast. That's Nate Robinson. He'll be appearing in the American Flag Football League, whose games are getting broadcasted on NFL Network this summer. Have a great rest of the week.
Yep. Thank you.
Familiar touch turns